Some words of macroeconomic wisdom from one Jerome H. Powell today. You've heard of him, right? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 9th of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know, never let it be said that the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States doesn't understand the modern news cycle. Promptly at 8:30 this morning, Washington time, as you have likely already heard, we learned another 6.6 million people in this economy have lost their jobs. More on that in just a minute from Mitchell Hartman. But at that very same stroke of 8:30, the Federal Reserve reached in and grabbed the macroeconomic headlines with news that it's making another $2.3 trillion available to businesses and state and local governments. The details, honestly, are weedy, so we will concentrate instead on the tone and tenor of what Powell said in a webinar this morning hosted by the Brookings Institution.
Many, many parts of the capital markets and lending more broadly stopped functioning. And that is exactly the situation that our emergency powers are meant to address. So we have moved in, and as I mentioned, our priority are those areas of the markets that are most fundamental to supporting the real economy.
I know what you want to know, right? What does the guy running the real American economy right now think about the prospects for the real American economy right now?
When the virus does run its course and it's safe to go back to work and safe for businesses to open, then we would expect there to be a fairly quick rebound as people do go back to work and start resuming normal levels of economic activity. I think most people expect that to happen in the second half of this year after the second quarter, which of course ends on June 30.
To be clear, there was some nuts and bolts economics discussed in response to questions from David Wessel, also of Brookings, and another public radio program you might listen to as well. Questions like, gee, Chair Powell, between all the money you're adding to the economy and all the money Congress is authorizing, you worried about inflation at all?
There are certainly, I would say, these are programs that we're developing at a high rate of speed. We don't have the luxury, you know, of taking our time the way we usually do. We're trying to get help quickly to the economy as it's needed. And I worry that, you know, in hindsight, you will see that we could have done things differently. But one thing I don't worry about is inflation right now.
Speaking of Congress, or as Powell and his Fed colleagues like to say, fiscal policymakers, yeah, they got some work to do.
We're not responsible for fiscal policy. We don't give public advice to Congress on fiscal policy. I will say that, as I mentioned in my remarks, in many cases, what people really need is direct fiscal support rather than a loan. And what we can do is loan. So there's a big need for fiscal policy.
Finally, one last thing, just because I think it's really important here, actually. It's the why of what the Fed is doing.
People are undertaking these sacrifices for the common good. We need to make them whole. To the extent we have the ability to make them whole, we should be doing that as a society. They didn't cause this. Their business isn't closed because of anything they did wrong. They didn't lose their job because of anything they did wrong. This is what the great fiscal power of the United States is for, is to protect these people as best we can from the hardships they're facing.
It's a good phrase, right? The great fiscal power of the United States. I kind of like that. Traders on Wall Street today decided to listen to the Fed and its $2 trillion, not the Department of Labor and the 16 million people who've lost their jobs the last 3 weeks. We will have the details when we do the numbers. All right, here's the thing about that unemployment claims number we got this morning. Once again, 6.6 million new applications. Those are only the people who were able to get through to their state benefits offices, offices that are obviously overwhelmed. So it's all but certain the actual number of people who've lost their jobs is a good deal higher. But look, how do you even get your head around this kind of unemployment? We've never seen this before in the modern era. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is on that one.
Just before the pandemic hit, we'd get 200, maybe 215,000 new unemployment claims every week. Since mid-March, it's been 20 to 30 times higher than that. Nearly 1 out of 10 people who had a job to go to before the pandemic don't have one now. But it's actually significantly worse than that, says economist Robert Frick at Navy Federal Credit Union.
There are people who are contract workers. There are people who actually cannot file for unemployment because states are so backed up.
Still more people likely won't qualify for unemployment benefits. Parents who have to stay home with school-age kids. People quarantined because they're at high risk for COVID-19. New graduates who can't even look for work. Add it all up.
I think we're around 14% unemployment rate right now, plus or minus 2%.
How high could it go by midsummer?
20% seems like a reasonable low end, but the caveat here is it's not 20% for years. We're not talking the Great Depression here. 20% for 2 or 3 months, then things will start coming down.
A better measure of the overall economic damage might be loss of household income. After all, that's what all the layoffs and people on reduced hours and shuttered businesses means at the end of the day or month. Kent Smetters is director of the Penn Wharton budget model.
Basically, a third of income will fall in the second quarter.
One thing that might mitigate all this income and job loss is the hundreds of billions of dollars Congress has earmarked for loans to small businesses so they can keep their employees on the payroll. Randy Delwo owns a company that makes scientific instruments in Bend, Oregon. Business is down 75%, but so far he's managed to keep paying his 10 employees.
So we're expecting that we're not going to lose anybody. We're going to be able to get through this okay, in part due to that SBA program.
He's applied for a forgivable loan to cover labor and operating expenses for a few months. He says orders are actually starting to pick up again from South Korea and China, where the pandemic appears to be waning. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
One of the defining characteristics of this economy the past decade or so, not often commented on outside the business press, has been the staggering amount of debt that American companies have piled up. The Fed is providing support for some of that part of the bond market, but not all corporate debt is created equal. Marketplace's Justin Ho gets us up to speed on where things stand.
Corporate debt ranges from safe investment-grade debt to risky, high-yield bonds. Chuck Tomes is a portfolio manager at Manulife Investment Management. He says any way you slice it, over the last 10 years, corporations have been borrowing a lot of money.
It's the most that it's ever been on a historical basis.
All that corporate debt has been attractive to investors, pension funds, insurance companies, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds. And with negative interest rates in Europe and Japan, Tom says foreign investors have been looking around for other places to park their money.
And they're finding it in a lot of cases, the U.S. corporate bond market.
Now that the Fed is widening its support for corporate debt, some companies have taken to borrowing even more, says Marquette University professor Matteo Arena.
We're seeing a lot of companies in the last week going out and issuing large amounts of debt at very low rates, and for many companies, very close to 0%.
There's already $5.4 trillion worth of investment-grade corporate debt out there, says Colin Martin, fixed income strategist for the Schwab Center for Financial Research. That might sound scary, but he says for the stronger sectors, like financial companies, more borrowing can be a positive.
The fact that corporations can issue this debt to kind of serve as a bridge to get them through this should be good for the longer-term health of a lot of corporations.
The risk, Martin says, falls on heavily indebted companies in sectors that are getting hammered by the pandemic, such as tourism, energy, and department stores.
You know, those companies are going to see a significantly negative hit to their cash flows. It's going to be tough to service those debts.
The Fed says it plans on purchasing some riskier assets, but Martin says that doesn't mean the Fed can keep companies out of default. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
The strain coronavirus is putting on this economy is seeping through to almost all parts of it. You lose your job, you can't pay your bills, rent, or your mortgage, your car loan maybe. Also, food. Food banks and pantries are stepping in, but there is so much need that capacity is being strained. And as Marketplace's Nova Sappho reports, some of those food banks are worried about how long they can keep up.
Food banks are sort of like Amazon distribution centers for charitable pantries, which then give out that food to people in need. And right now, there's a lot of need out there.
This spike in the demand for food assistance is unlike anything we've experienced before.
Michael Flood runs the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. He says it expects to distribute 2 million meals this week. Demand is up 50%. At the same time, many traditional sources of donated food have dried up. Restaurants are closed. Grocery stores are overwhelmed.
At this rate of food distribution, we're at somewhere between 3 to 4 weeks of inventory that we can continue to rely on.
Flood's counterpart in New York has a similar projection. In a few weeks, Dan Egan's charity, Feeding New York State, projects it will be buying a lot of the food it needs.
We're doing okay right now. We're all worried a few weeks out, you know, what's going to happen. We don't have endless resources.
There is some good news. Food banks aren't the only source of help. Congress just allocated more than $15 billion to pay for all the expected new applications for SNAP, what used to be called food stamps. Janet Poppendick is a senior faculty fellow at the Urban Food Policy Institute at the City University of New York.
The charitable food system occupies a bigger place in the national imagination, but the federal food assistance programs provide the lion's share of assistance.
Poppendick says the problem is that SNAP usually doesn't provide enough money for a whole month of food. There's now a push to get Congress to increase the amount of aid. Another problem is that most SNAP recipients can't order food online, meaning they can't use the aid for deliveries, which would help them maintain social distancing. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we were already in production for these little chocolate bunnies.
Easter in the coronavirus economy. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 285 today, 1.2%, finished at 23,719 as we hear the sad, happy music. The NASDAQ climbed 62 points, about 0.7%, 8153. S&P 500 advanced 39 points, 1.4%, 2789. As Justin mentioned, some industries are highly leveraged, means they have a lot of debt, right? Department stores, for instance, in the retail sector. So, with that in mind, Macy's buttoned up 10.8% today. JCPenney found more than 5%. Nordstrom put on more than 12%. Disney Plus now has more than 550 million subscribers globally. That's within 5 months of its launch. Not too shabby, huh? Disney clicked up 3.3% today. Netflix basically flat. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We started today with Jay Powell talking about how this economy might get back to normal. On the same day that we learned another 6.5 million people have filed for unemployment benefits for the first time, as Mitchell was telling us. This whole thing is daunting, of course, made more so by the idea that the recession we are in could turn into a depression. That's why we got some economic historians together last week and asked them what we ought to be keeping an eye on to know whether worse might come to worst.
Unemployment, of course.
Unemployment claims.
The unemployment rate.
Credit delinquencies.
Credit markets.
Credit for small businesses.
Significant and prolonged deflation.
Declining prices.
And bankruptcies.
That was Kathleen Day from Johns Hopkins, Carola Friedman from Northwestern, also Eric Hilt from Wellesley. We reviewed deflation on Tuesday, unemployment yesterday. So today, Thursday, the one that is left.
Credit delinquencies.
Credit markets.
Credit for small businesses.
And bankruptcies.
Credit is really the whole deal here. Literally the foundation of our financial system. The trust that one party has in another to pay for something later. Banks offer credit, right? Loans. Companies draw on lines of credit. You use credit every time you swipe your card. Without credit, pretty much everything grinds to a halt. We know that because it's happened before.
The reason that the Great Depression was the Great Depression was that the financial system essentially melted down.
That's Eric Hilt at Wellesley.
The economy started to contract in probably summer of 1929, but it became a Great Depression rather than a severe recession, probably starting in 1930 when a wave of bank failures started to occur.
Banks worried companies wouldn't be able to pay back their loans, so people worried banks wouldn't have their money if they wanted to take out their savings. So there were bank runs and bank failures, businesses couldn't borrow, and the economy just stopped.
So the tipping point that led to what we think of as the Great Depression was banking crises.
That's why, and let's cue up Chair Powell from this morning here, that's why one of the big things that Congress and the Fed are trying to do is to make sure that doesn't happen again.
When the credit system breaks, it can really inflict much greater damage on the economy. We're doing everything we can to avoid that, and we'll continue to do that.
All that money for small business loans, that's credit. Lowering interest rates, that makes credit cheaper. Buying up treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities, yeah, all of that is about making sure banks can keep lending to businesses so that businesses can keep paying their people, so that those people can pay their bills and eventually spend money at other businesses once this is over, or less bad anyway, and we can all finally leave our houses again. Remember, though, we wanted to know what to look for in the credit markets, which is, once again, how much confidence people have and businesses have that other people and businesses are going to be able to pay them back. So, one word from Kathleen Day at Johns Hopkins.
Bankruptcies.
Total bankruptcies in 2010, just as we were climbing out of the financial crisis, nearly 1.6 million, that's businesses and personal. In 2019, less than 800,000 bankruptcies, businesses and personal. So there you go. Credit, deflation, and unemployment, depression markers that we will be keeping an eye on for however long this thing goes on. Days later, Wuhan, China has had its lockdown lifted. Officials in the city where the coronavirus outbreak started say nearly all big industrial companies in town are back up and running. But as Marketplace's Jennifer Pack reports, life for the city's 11 million residents is definitely not business as usual.
A Chinese official declares highways in and out of Wuhan open again this week. News reports hailed this as the end of a 76-day lockdown. For journalist Wang Ai, who works in Wuhan, it means she can finally return to the office. Well, sort of.
Different employees go to the office on different days of the week, and the office hours are shorter.
These measures are among the many businesses must take to control the spread of the COVID-19 virus. The end of the lockdown also means Wang Ai, her mom, and dad are finally allowed to step outside of their apartment complex when they please. Not so for Zhang Xingxing in another Wuhan neighborhood, where a resident tested positive for coronavirus a few days ago.
It used to be that one family member could shop for groceries every day. That's now every 3 days.
Her daughter is attending online classes at home because schools are still closed, which is fine for now because Zhang Xingxing's real estate company hasn't called her back to work yet.
I've not been paid for the past 2 months. Our finance department isn't back at work yet.
She's not too worried. Like many in China, she has good savings, and her husband's salary is stable. While she's not working, Zhang Xingxing spends her time cooking, chatting with friends, and watching TV series like this one. It's about a singer and a businessman trying to revive the Peking Opera. For young people adept at online entertainment and social media, life under lockdown has been bearable, but not so much for the elderly. Again, journalist Wang Ai.
My parents would ask me, why was Wuhan locked down? When will the order be lifted? When will the pandemic end? These questions gnawed at them every day. They got mad at me, and I had to try to console them.
Public anger over the handling of the coronavirus has led to some officials losing their jobs, and many still question whether the lockdown could have been avoided. Last December, a few people tried to warn others about a potential SARS-like virus, which we now know is COVID-19, but they were pulled in by the police for spreading rumors, among them Dr. Li Wenliang, who later died from the coronavirus.
He's the hero of China.
A hero, according to China's top respiratory disease expert, Zhong Nanshan. He fought back tears during an interview with Reuters. Of course, some people heeded the early warnings and took precautions. Investor Tian Changxing bought his family face masks and goggles. As an investor, I planned for worst-case scenarios, he told me back in January. After 75 days of being cooped up at home, he says he suffered insomnia and depression and wasn't feeling inspired. Long term, he fears this might affect his ability to make good investment decisions. Other Wuhan residents worry more about fresh outbreaks. Again, journalist Wang Ai.
I used to hear ambulance sirens almost every day. Now when I hear that sound, I think, is there another case in my neighborhood?
Her advice to Americans now going through a tough time? We're all in this together. A sentiment echoed in this song, Hand in Hand, recorded specially by Chinese artists for the pandemic. Hold my hand, my friend. Love is all around you. Don't be afraid and don't give up. All this shall pass. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Spent some time over the holiday shopping season with three small business owners, getting a sense of how the most important days of the retail year were going for them. A short, if admittedly unscientific survey from an economy gone by, actually. We've been wondering how they're doing now, those folks, especially since for one of them in the chocolate business, another key holiday, Easter, is upon us. So here you go.
My name is Kristen Tallheimer Bingham. I am co-owner of Dean Sweets in Portland, Maine. The coronavirus has hit our business, so we're down 75% as a guess. In order to keep our staff working, we have taken a few steps, one of which was to reduce the hours so that we could still continue to provide some hours. The other thing that we're doing as we approach Easter, we were already in production for these little chocolate bunnies, and we just decided we would ask our staff just to keep making them, make as many as they possibly can so that we can do two things. Donate the bunnies to nonprofits that we've been working with over the years. And the second thing it does is it allows us to keep our employees working. It's given us meaning in our work. And it's given our employees a reason to keep working. Giving away these bunnies is just a tiny little thing. We realize that, but it is what we can do to be a part of, you know, investing in our future as a business, to invest in our staff, to invest in our community. So we're really happy about that.
That was Kristen Tallheimer Bingham, co-proprietor of Dean's Sweets in Portland, Maine. Tell us, would you, how the coronavirus has changed things for you? You can do that at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which the predictability of Americans' eating habits runs up against a shutdown economy. From the pages of the Washington Post today, this item. We are having, it seems, a chicken wing glut. March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament, is a big driver of wing consumption. As you know, the tournament has been canceled, and here we are with all those uneaten wings. Prices have collapsed, almost $2 a pound back during the Super Bowl, $1.09 a pound right now. It's a supply chain story, really, because you want wings by late March, you got to start hatching chickens just after New Year's. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials up 285 points today, 1.2%. The NASDAQ up 62.7%. S&P 500 put on 39 points. That is 1.4% there. Stocks and bonds close tomorrow, by the way, for Good Friday. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, Rick Carr, and John Gordon are the Marketplace editing staff. Betsy Streisand is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.